evening, everyone. I'm Joseph Cotto, and before I say another word, Cotto Gottfried is sponsored by Alaska Chaga. To see why their chaga may be a great fit for you, please click on the link below. The show gets 10% of any purchase you make. In times like these, it is important to support businesses that are willing to support shows like this. So what are you waiting for? Check out Alaska Chaga. Also, do you want to understand the world around you and maybe yourself a bit better than you do now? Are you looking for answers to some of life's greatest questions, even if they are the most difficult ones? Maybe you just want to learn something new. In any case, online great books may be just what you are looking for. When you sign up for a course there by following the link below, Cotto Gottfried gets $45. Learn about the past's insight on our present and the future by learning in online great books. Knowledge is power. Joining me tonight is Chrissy Mayer. I hope I pronounced that correctly, your last name.
Yeah, you nailed it, Joseph.
Great. Thank you very much for coming on. For those who don't know, Chrissy is one of the, one might say, few, the proud and the brave non-leftist comedians. And I mean, just the presence of something, of someone like that, it, I think deserves a very detailed discussion in and of itself. So thank you very much for being here, Chrissy.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm like a three-toed sloth. I'm like very rare. And you have to just be like, what? A female comic who is not like a crazy liberal? Yeah. But I used to be one. And now I've sort of like come to the light, I guess.
No, I think that'd be something definitely worth discussing. Before we go on, I'll just say that if anybody has a reasonable, responsible question or comment, you can feel free to leave it in the live chat. It's a super chat. We'll get to it. But please don't leave it all for the end. Thank you very much in advance. So, Chrissy, I guess when people, well, you know, when they hear about someone who's not on the left and someone who is in comedy, and then someone who's a woman, they'll probably, you know, think that we're talking about something that's close to a fairy tale here. But obviously, that's not the case. So how did it come to be? This might sound like a very broad question to start out with, but I think it's pretty fitting. Take it wherever you like. How did it come to be that you are in comedy and you are not on the left? And of course, we all know that you're a woman. So I think that only leaves two things to address.
So far, yes, I do identify as a woman. Thank you so much for asking my pronouns. Well, I sort of had your typical, like I graduated in college 2005, like very typical, like, liberal college upbringing, like, you know, communications major, women's studies minor. So I was like in it. I was like social justice warrior, like just because all my friends were doing it. And then sort of like left college, like got into improv, which wasn't super political. But then when I got into stand up about like 10 years ago, just kind of like all my friends were super liberal and were like in our echo chamber and were just sort of, but not really into politics either. And then I just found, I think ever since like Trump was elected, ever since like 4 years ago, I just sort of like, and also I'm like growing up during this time too. I'm like becoming a real adult, like working jobs, you know, I'm familiar with like the real world and not like fucking La La Land. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse.
Oh, it's fine, no problem.
Okay, cool. So I actually found like 2 years ago, I started doing like bit characters on Compound Media, which is a network that was started by Anthony Cumia. He was the famous Anthony from Opie and Anthony. Yeah. And then when he left Sirius XM, what, like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, he started Compound Media. And then I started doing characters on this show called In Hot Water. And I was finding that like my sense of humor, like really closely aligned with the guys on this show. All the while I'd hear from my other comedy friends and just regular friends like, oh, how dare you go on Compound Media? They're all right. That's, you know, Gavin McGinnis used to have a show there. How, you know, I can't believe you're associating with them. And I'm like, look, I'm just doing silly characters. And that was my first sign of like, huh, wow, it seems like people on the left like really love putting people in boxes. And I was feeling judgment, but like still kind of going back and forth between the two worlds. Like, yeah, like doing shows in Brooklyn. Like, I'll, you know, you're when you're a comic, you, for many years, you just go and do shows wherever you're booked. So it's like, okay, I'll do a super woke coffee shop in Brooklyn, but I also want to do real clubs, and I'm getting on the road more and more. And I think the more I got on the road, the more my sense of humor developed and the more that I realized like, oh, there's what most of the country laughs at. And then there's what like Brooklyn laughs at. And it's not, and some comics never leave that bubble. And so they think that they can have a whole career just shitting on Trump or like, you know, really that's been it. That's been basically the main theme of a lot of like leftist comics. So while I'm still actually a registered Democrat, I found like over the years, like, just started thinking about where do I fit in? What is my place? Am I more libertarian? I'm all for, like, I hosted a show at the Stonewall Inn for 6 years. I'm all for the gays, big fan of the gays. Like, some of my best outfits are because of the gays, you know, like, just all the love. People can, I don't care who you get married to, who you're fucking, like, do whatever. But then I'm just thinking more like, wow, free speech is increasingly so important to me. I'm understanding the Second Amendment more. I'm just like, I guess becoming more of a patriot, like realizing like how great this country is and how like when things start to change is when we realize like, oh, we've had it like really good for so long. We've never even had to think about our rights. Like that's how good we've had it. And so this is like all happening at the same time. And then like I have comedian friends are sort of like canceling me because I'm associating with Compound Media. I have regular friends who are like cutting me off because I even mentioned Trump, like even just fast forward, like I was covering the rallies in DC this past weekend. I had people, not even like their friends, but just people in your Instagram comments like, oh, I didn't know you were a Trumper. Oh, I lost respect for you. It's like, oh, I can't even cover an event without being put into a box. So that's been really sad. I think I've just noticed that there's more like sane people on the right, I guess. But it's so interesting because like, it takes less and less for you to be considered on the right. You know, like I would just go on a show and people would call me alt-right. I interview Gavin McGinnis for my podcast. Now I'm alt-right. It takes so little to be thrown out of the woke boat, so to speak, that it's like people are getting fed up with that. Like I'm probably a classic old school liberal, but in 2020 standards, like, yeah, maybe I am a little more right. Maybe who the fuck knows? And it's so hard. And now, especially from a comedic standpoint, there is so much more to make fun of, like, especially in the last few months, like Hunter Biden's laptop, like Chrissy Teigen having a public miscarriage, like Joe Biden alone, Kamala Harris, like slipping and showing her, you know, socialism, communism, real face, you know? So it's like this weird combination of like not really sure where, what box I'm in, what category am I in, but at the same time, like, okay, people on the left really love to put me on the right. So it's like, let me just go where I'm loved, you know, like I don't have the luxury of like choosing my fans. Like you'll see some celebrities or comics and be like, oh, they're writing people off. Like, don't talk to me. Don't retweet me if you're for Trump. And it's like, well, I don't have that luxury. Like my job and purpose in life is to like spread joy, you know, make fun of myself. Whoever is about me, like, yeah, I love all that. Like, yeah, that's all. Like, if you guys are going to come to my shows, support me, sign up for my Patreon, whatever, listen to my podcast, like, great. Then that's the goal, you know? I think that's crazy when you see celebrities or public figures, you know, being like, oh, I don't want to associate with certain people because of their political leanings. I think that's fucking crazy. And I think it's just as comedians, like, of course, that's what blew my mind. That's when I started to like definitely move away from the left, when I was like, oh my God, we have like leftist comedians who are like actively canceling other comedians because of their political leanings. And I'm like, well, shouldn't we be for free speech or fucking comedians? Like, that's our number one thing. And that's what really kind of solidified it for me. I was like, oh, wow. There does seem to be kind of like two teams of comedy. And it just like the media is sort of controlled by the left, as is Hollywood. It seems like the comics that are kind of cozy with Comedy Central, cozy with the late night spots, they are more left-leaning. It's like, yeah, they'll be like, oh, we want diversity. We're so woke. We're so with it. But it's like, no, a lot of these comics are spouting the same message. They just come in different colors. So I find like on the right is truly comedically where there's more a welcoming of diversity of thought. And especially going to this, the Walk Away and the Stop the Steal rallies this past weekend in DC, I was like so blown away by like not only how diverse everyone was, but like just the love, like, oh, it was so great. Like, it's so packed. I think there was 1.5 million people in DC this weekend for these rallies. And like, we're all like kind of close together, but nobody's even like elbowing for their personal space. Like, you're kind of standing there, like listening to the speakers. You're like, okay, at any moment there could be like a stampede, you know, but everyone's chill. Everyone's respectful. You could wear a mask or not, but no one was giving you a hard time. No one was like forcing you. There were no mask cops there, which I liked, and everyone was respected one another. And it's interesting because on the way to into the march or towards the rally, we had to walk by kind of like a procession of Antifa and BLM, and they're all just as you'd expect, almost like right at a central casting. You know, we need to cast Antifa, BLM people. You have people like so close in your face. The Klan rally's this way. The Klan rally's this way. Like, fuck you. And it's like, hi, we just met. Nice to meet you. They're screaming at little kids, screaming at old people. And it's like, it's so hard to explain that away, you know? It's like, how can you be with the people that are for this? It's just like, nobody, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to your thing and fucking your shit up. It's like, you're here. We're just like, it was so, so peaceful, so chill. And yeah, like late at night, then you'd have like Antifa were kind of coming out wanting to pick fights. But even during, on like the rally path, or like the march path, there'd be like one Antifa, like always by themselves, like just one person. And they'd be shouting like, fuck you. And they were, the MAGA people were shouting back like, we love you. Like, God bless you. And then I was like, yeah, let me give you a hug. Come here. Like, literally, like, I hear my grandma's voice being like, yeah, just kill them with kindness. And it's like, if they're going to be nasty after we say those things to them, like, okay, that's your mental illness then, because we're just trying to do our thing. And it does feel good to, like, when you're met with that, to just send love back and try to just make them feel stupid for acting the way they're acting, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting. I mean, this whole situation that we're in now, culturally, politically, it's really hard to describe, but you know it when you see it, if that makes any sense at all. I guess, you know, just think about how I was going to label you for the discussion. I say conservative comedian because within certainly by the standards of the comedy world, they would consider you to be a conservative, but they would, you know, consider someone who was a liberal by the standards of 10 years ago to be a conservative as well. So that really doesn't mean much of anything. But my political views are all over the place, all over the place. They generally cool toward the right, but I mean, they are all, I have very much a heterodox way of thinking when it comes to politics on the whole. You couldn't put me in any specific movement. And there are a lot of people, I think, who are like me. I've always been a Republican, what we call Rockefeller Republican, which is one who's not really tethered to movement conservatism. But, you know, there are a lot of folks now who are just alienated from where the left has gone. And they find themselves to be de facto conservatives. I certainly would be among that group. If you get to be a part of this group simply because you're not going along with whatever it is that the essentially the leftist narrative is today, not even yesterday, but today. And as you were mentioning, people will kick you out of what they would call polite society if you don't adhere to that narrative. And I've noticed among people a mindless adherence to it. And this is fascinating because when I was growing up, the people on the right were very square. They were very, the idea was that they were dour.
Yeah, it was British. It was like classy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now it's the opposite, really. As I've been seeing, the right has become much more open to free expression, which is a huge deal with me. And it's also become less interested in what could be called like sexual issues. But the left has become much more focused on sex, sexuality, so on and so forth, and has become much more puritanical, much more dour, much more angry. And the shift has occurred, I think, within the last decade. And it's just fascinating to see how it has come to pass. I guess before we get into comedy, any thoughts on anything I just brought up, Chrissy?
Yeah, for sure. Like the left has like, I didn't even think this was going to be possible, but it's like they've leaned so far into like diversity and inclusion that now they're the new racists. Like they're just like, well, we're only buying black owned stuff. And I'm seeing like, it's more just like socially appropriate to be racist towards white people. And we're just like supposed to take it and be cool with it. And like, if I were to say like, yeah, I don't really feel like I have any white privilege. Like my dad was a landscaper. He didn't have any health insurance. Like we were kind of broke. Like, I don't feel like I got a leg up because of my own upbringing. Like, I don't know. I haven't been any other skin color, but it certainly hasn't felt easy. Like, so but you say that, people go, oh, you can't acknowledge your white privilege. And I'm like, I don't know. I've had like at least one job since I was 15 years old. Like, it's like there's more stereotyping, I think, on the left. And yeah, now it's like they're like legit being racist. Like I've seen, I don't know if it was TikTok or like Facebook or whatever. It was like this just video, like viral video of like what white people suck at. It's like a straight up racist towards white people video. And it's like, haha, it's so funny. It's like and that's like socially accepted now. It's like, oh, we can, for a while it was like, we're shitting on like white guys or like guys in general. Like everyone's taking a turn, I guess. But now it's like, now it's okay to just be like really hateful towards white people. And it's like, yeah, I don't know if anybody in my family owns slaves. Like, I don't know if I'm directly responsible. Like, can we all just like truly, like what happened to the 90s when we were growing up, right? When really like people weren't obsessed with race like they were now. Like truly it was not on our minds. It was like, it felt more equal back then than it does now. There was not this obsession with race. Like I had plenty of black girlfriends when I was like in elementary school and middle school, and like we just didn't talk about it. Like wouldn't that have been the place to stay instead of to kind of like weirdly regress? So
yeah, it's bizarre how the times have changed, and definitely not for the better within the context of what we're discussing here. I think that if I had to say, I think that the left of today is definitely searching for something, because the politics that they espouse, it's not just like, you know, people talk about issue by issue, which is what I was used to growing up. I grew up with, you know, exposure to a wide array of political views, and, you know, it was not alien for me to hear two totally different perspectives on key issues within any given day. But for a lot of folks now, specifically on the left, it's like they're looking for a movement, looking for a religion. I think wokeness is, without a doubt, like a replacement religion for Christianity. So what you typically see, the fervor with the religious right in the days of yore, are now is now the fervor with the religious left in the Church of Social Justice Warfare. And I find that to be fascinating, because pretty much the most aggravating things that I saw growing up with Christian conservatism and Christianity, to be blunt in general, are now being emulated and amplified on the left with sort of like a secularized version of the Christian tradition. They're very messianic, very evangelical, and they, like I said before, puritanical, and they just don't want to shut up about it. Now, Chrissy, so I understand that you do live in New York City, which is sort of like the belly of the beast for this kind of thing. From what you see of people who just, you know, pretty much mindlessly spout this stuff and to try to cajole others into doing the same, where do you think they're coming from? I gave my view, but I don't live in any place like New York, and it's quite possible that my perspective is very skewed on where these folks are coming from.
Yeah, like you said, like the woke liberal mob, although there probably are woke liberal moms too. Like you're saying, it's become a replacement. Like, yeah, it's become a replacement for like conversation. You know, being in the woke liberal mob means you don't have to explain yourself. You're not going to have a debate. Discussion is out, because it's not their job to educate you. You know, like there's all these buzzwords and catchphrases that gets them out of having to explain where they're really at. And thank God, because a lot of them probably don't even know why they feel the way they feel. They've just been told that that's the cool place to be, or like you're not with it, or, you know, it's not enough to just like not be racist. You have to be anti-racist. And if you're not saying that, and that was a big moment for me too, like whatever day it was over the summer that like everybody had to do the black square on their Instagram. And I was like, okay, I guess I have to do this. And then I'm like, no, I don't. And like that, it started to piss me off. I'm like, what? I'm not a good person unless I have a fucking black square on my Instagram, which does nothing. And it's just wild. It's like, I'm not in a hiring position. You know what I mean? Like so many of this, like the corporate, like inclusion shit, it just doesn't like fit like my life. Like it's like, okay, if I was hiring somebody, I probably would just look at whoever's most qualified. I wouldn't think of like who looks best on a pamphlet. So it's like, yeah, the woke liberal mob, it gets it kind of like you have a group identity, right? Because so it's easier to be part of a group than be an individual. And Jordan Peterson, which I don't know if you like know his work, like he talks about that all the time, Like, you got to, it's got to be like the self first, individual self, like work on your stuff instead of just like, oh, it's almost like it's cultish, you know? It's like, you don't have to explain yourself. You can kick out anybody who doesn't agree with you, and you get to be violent to anyone who doesn't agree with you, because whoever doesn't agree with you is a Nazi, and the Nazi, a Nazi is the worst thing you could be. Therefore, like, you can be violent because they're now the worst thing you can be, which is like, it's insane. It's like the mental gymnastics you have to do to get there. It's like, it's exhausting. So
it's a situation bizarre as it is disgusting. And, you know, where it goes in the future, I don't know, but I don't have a lot of confidence. I will just say about that black square thing, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually forgot about it, but, you know,
it was like forever ago.
It's the, that is, you know, the most sort of cheap performative thing one can do. Makes absolutely no difference in terms of advocating for what you claim to be standing for. And it's just people trying to show off toward other people, who most of whom are probably white, about how, you know, racially sensitive they are, so on and so forth. And it's just that kind of thing is really, it's really unintelligent, first and foremost. But then it's just so crass and so pointless. It's just, you know, it's really virtue signaling, I think, in its distilled form. And seeing that is always that sort of thing, I should say, has always got a rise out of me, because it's just people doing something because they have been told that they're shameful, they don't do it, and people are, you know, playing on folks' emotions, their weaker emotions to be exact, and that's just a phenomenon that I hate to see. I think it's debased. It debases human beings, and as a humanist, that seeing that sort of thing unfold really is just nauseating, but it does unfold. And a lot of people are quite satisfied with that. I'm very sorry to say.
Yeah, it's like it's a bullying move. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, I was like, yeah, this doesn't feel right. I'm not going to do it. And then like days later, I was like, yeah, that was the right move. Cause like, first of all, it's giving way too much importance to social media. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, well, I'm not going to be bullied into like, yeah, performing how fucking anti-racist. And no, I'm not racist. And it's like, people who are going to judge me and think that I'm racist because I didn't do the black square. It's like, well, guess what? You don't know me. And I don't really, I shouldn't care about your opinion. So
it's not. No, absolutely. No, people shouldn't be this interested in each other's opinions to begin with as they are now. This whole thing of, you know, it's groupthink. It's not my way, it's the highway. And it goes into this sort of religious thinking, which we see on the left. I mean, there's some of it on the right too. Let's not, you know, but it's much less now than it was, you know, even half a decade ago. It's because there's a shift going on among people who are not leftists, and it's supplanting essentially the old movement conservatism, which is certainly not a bad thing, because I can't think of a damn thing which movement conservatism can serve. So it's interesting to see what's taking place now. And it's not just here. I mean, it's in the UK. There was actually something interesting that came out last year when Boris Johnson won his, you know, huge majority in Parliament. And it was in the American Conservative, which is far from reliably conservative despite its name. And it was about the new social conservatism is what they called it. And it identified Johnson as a key figure in that. The new social conservatism isn't about, you know, the God, gays, abortion stuff of yesteryear. It's about people wanting to live their life as they see fit, but the left trying to prevent them from doing that, either through legislation or through, you know, group shaming, public shaming, that kind of thing. And Johnson was thought of as a new social conservative simply because he wanted to conserve a society in which people can be left to their own devices as long as they're not harming others. And I think that is what conservatism is becoming, certainly what the, you know, social conservatism is becoming by and large. Still some people out there who are a minority, they hold much more traditional views, but they have no nationwide or even in most key states, statewide constituency. So I think it's fascinating. We're seeing a political shift. And that's why I think so many folks can throw around labels like, you know, you're on the left if you don't believe X, Y, and Z, which are the traditional conservative holdouts. They'll say that if you don't believe in, like, you know, that gay marriage should be overturned or something like that. And then you have people on the left who will, for virtually any reason, say you're a fascist, you're this, you're that, if you don't believe that, you know, people should stop at 3 p.m. and bow down and say a secular prayer to the God of anti-whiteness. It's just, you know, it is a strange time, and we are in this, like, set of a transition, and so these labels get thrown around a lot because they mean different things to different people. But I think we are moving towards something that's going to be much more set in stone, and that's going to be a non-leftist movement, which will be called the right or conservatism or whatever. Really doesn't matter what it's called. And that's going to be more about people not being bullied by these, you know, militant, woke, SJW leftists. So that's how I see things. Christy, anything to say about my long-winded comment?
Yeah, for sure. And I hope that that trend that I agree is coming too. I hope that, like, you know, kind of bleeds over into the comedy world, because it's like, damn, it's like, let people enjoy what they want to enjoy. Let somebody, you know what I mean? If you don't like a comic, like, don't follow them. Go do something else. Like, don't make it your, oh, well, this person's on the right, so I need to call up the venues that they're performing at and get them canceled and let them lose work and, like, just crush them to a pulp. You know, it's like, get a fucking life. Like, that's the worst part of it. It's like, the crazy left mob has been unable to, like, just go on with their life. How about enjoy what you enjoy? Don't stop. It's like the most selfish, cancel culture is the most selfish move. It's like, it's so narcissistic. It's like, you can't acknowledge that, like, all right, well, tons of people enjoy this comic, and maybe just, like, let their fans see them, and you can just do whatever you want. You don't have to, like, keep this person from working and, like, keep them for providing for their family or whatever. But that's the thing. It's like this perfect storm of, like, you know, social media stuff. It's like, oh, well, it's in our pocket. It's on our feed. Somebody, it used to be back in the day that if you go to a comedy club and you'd have to physically go there and be like, all right, I'm down. I'm ingesting the comedy. This is the experience that I signed up for. But now it's in our phones, it's in our pockets. So it's like, you pull out your phone and you're like, oh, this comic that maybe I wouldn't have paid money to go see is now in my timeline. And now that, like, everyone's egos are kind of inflated, like, everyone's got a Twitter account, everyone thinks their opinion matters, you know, everyone's throwing in their two cents. And it's also like the people who don't feel a lot of power in their lives through their decisions or, like, whatever, their baggage, it's like, well, they can feel power by canceling somebody whose views they don't agree with, and that feels really good. That's a drug. And then they want more and more in that. It's like, it's harder. It's so much harder to work on yourself and take a look at your own unhealthy patterns and shit. And it's harder to, like, work to get a better job or get a raise. But it's like that immediate rush of, like, ooh, I, like, annihilated somebody I don't agree with. Like, I canceled their show, or, like, I got a huge group of people to, like, troll them on Instagram or whatever it is. It's sad. So it's like, I hope for people in the whatever woke liberal mob that they, like, really realign with a sense of purpose other than just, like, you know, annihilating someone else's freedom of speech. You know, it's like, if it's not for you, move on with your life. Like, don't cancel them. Suck it up.
No, absolutely. I couldn't put that any better myself. There's really something I wanted to get into about comedy, but there are some super chats here, so we'll get to them first. From Row House, for Chrissy, do you see how even leftist comedians like Bill Maher or Chris Rock dislike this PC culture? Given this, do you know what drives it? Is it really groups like the SPLC that drive it?
Well, like, I feel like Bill Maher is, like, so, he feels, like, just so detached from his own show. Like, I know he has writers, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like he should have possibly hung it up a while ago, but he's like Mr. Hollywood. He likes still being in the spotlight. I think it's like, it might be a lot of sort of, like, kind of afraid people on the left, especially in Hollywood. They feel like their loyalties kind of rest on the left, and they're probably afraid of being blackballed, like losing work in such a big public way, that they're just, like, quietly, you know, either gonna be quiet or they're gonna be like, oh yeah, I hate Trump, the whole Orange Man Bad song and dance. Because how many, like, out conservative, well, there's more coming out now, I think, especially, like, when I was at the rally in DC, you're seeing, like, these, like, pro-Trump rappers. I'm like, what's more badass than that? You know, like, these guys should be famous. What's my point? So I feel like a lot of people in Hollywood or in entertainment feel like, which includes, like, most comedy, right, that we see, Comedy Central, late night shows, like Fallon, Kimmel, all that stuff. They feel like, all right, well, it's kind of like these are the people they've hired to be writers. They're all on the side, and this is who we feel like our loyalties are with. So it feels like if there's somebody in that writing crew that wants to take a risk, and it's like they're kind of probably drowned out because everyone around them is like, oh no, this is, you know, especially like SNL is such a good example, and it's most people are not going to SNL to laugh anymore. They're just like, they're checking in, but it's like they don't take any risks anymore. It's like, so you can't respect that from like a comedic standpoint. It's like they all make so much money, you know. It's like it's corporate. It's like when Nike was like all about BLM. It's like it's the least. It's like the it's not brave. That's like a safe take is for any corporation, including like SNL, to be like, oh yeah, BLM. Like that's, I'm for people who take risks and you know, say the truthful thing instead of the safe thing.
Mm-hmm. Me as well, no question. From Argyle Euphoria, Chrissy, what do you think about Norm MacDonald?
God, I'm definitely like, I know he's a funny guy. I'm not like I'm not a big fan, but that doesn't mean I don't like him. I think he's cool. I don't think he's like a super woke type, but I could be wrong. Yeah, I'm like, I know that he's super funny. I guess I haven't been like following him like too closely. I don't have a good answer for you. I'm sorry.
No, I think it was fine. From K-Max McDonald, for both, which comedian did you consider the worst on the woke SJW scale? My vote is for Chelsea Handler or Margaret Cho. When I read that, K-Max, your question, Margaret Cho came to mind even before I finished reading what you were saying. But Handler and Cho are very bad. I think this might sound a little off the wall, but Patton Oswalt has aggravated me quite a bit as well. He's someone who, even Sarah Silverman, I mean, Sarah Silverman basically, she has turned her back on comedy that she used to do and now sort of polices against it. That's the perspective I get. And Patton Oswalt is basically an apologist for SJW ideology in a very grotesque way. And if what he's pushing now were what was being pushed when he was getting a start in comedy, you can be damn sure he would be someone who nobody knows about today. But Handler and Cho are very bad as well. So I don't want to make any excuses for them, but that's my take, K-Max. I'm sure Chrissy has a much more.
Yeah. All these people you mentioned, like, I've stopped following all these people so long ago that the only time I hear about them is when they're like acting up and doing something like so public. Like with Sarah Silverman, it was like seeing her topless in like the Naked Ballot commercial thing that was going around. And I was like, ugh, I was like, do we really need to see this? Like, I don't know. I guess so. I guess some guys are like, oh yeah, tits. That's great. And it's like the same exact cast of characters, like, you know, Schumer and God, I forget all their names, but it's like, I know their faces, Ruffalo, you know, same crowd. And you're like, ugh, none of these people are relatable. Like, it's just, you immediately tune out. And it's like, yeah, what did I hear that Handler did something really egregious? She said like, was it something about 50 Cent? Like she was like, alluding to the fact that they had hooked up and something like, oh, I'll fuck you again if you vote for Biden or something crazy like that. And you're like, oh, Chelsea, like, you're a little too old to be like, I don't know, saying this kind of shit. But I don't know. I don't mean to sound like a hater. I'm not like sexually close-minded or something, but it was like icky for no reason, you know?
And yeah, I think what it was 50 Cent said he would vote for Trump because he didn't like Biden's tax policy. And then Handler said that she would pay 50 cents taxes if he voted for Biden. So that was what caused that sort of stir. But I mean, the whole thing.
Something about them hooking up too. She definitely like alluded to something sexual between the two of them. Like, I'm not making that up. I just don't remember.
No, it's the whole thing. I mean, not just with them. I mean, the whole thing, period, with these woke comedians. It's sad because they're betraying their craft and doing their political activism. And, you know, they're not going to leave a good future for themselves, let alone others, because there are going to be people now who come up through the ranks. I don't even know if it's going to be the ranks of comedy, because a lot of people on the left aren't interested in laughs anymore. But they're going to be people who take something, a clip of, you know, say, Silverman from 1999, and they'll use it against her. On the basis of something she advocated for, you know, last year when she's in her more woke phase. And after a while, if the studio thinks, or I should say, thinking film industry, but it was thought of, and she's thought of as no longer being bankable, so to speak, at MeDM, whatever company she's working for will cut her off. I mean, that's just the nature of the economy. They're not going to take risks for any, you know, person now, even if that person is huge, because there's so much to lose from these, you know, insane mobs. And that's really what they are, who try to cancel people and use economic warfare in order to get that done. So, I mean, it's just a crazy time in which we live. Really, it is.
Yeah, I think if you're some, and I'd have to check myself on this on my own, like, you know, make sure I'm like walking the walk, right? Like I always say, like, just make sure that your political beliefs or whatever it's like, if you're a true comic, funny needs to be number one. Then your other priorities, whatever other parts of your message need to come after that. But if you're finding that your political views are more important than the funny, then it's like, all right, well, then you're becoming something else. Then you're becoming more of an activist. And maybe you shouldn't like really be in the comedy industry, like per se. Sure, keep your Twitter, but like you don't need to be writing for a show if comedy is not your number one priority. And I have to keep that in mind with myself too. It's like, I'll have days where I'll be like, in rabbit holes or really into conspiracy theories, or I'll, you know, retweeting a bunch of people who are like getting me excited, you know, like Brandon Strock from the Walk Away movement. And then I have to remember, like, okay, Chrissy, you're still a comedian. Like you make sure you're still putting funny first. And you know who's like such a good example of that right now is Ryan Long. And he's a comedian out of Canada. He's a buddy of mine. He moved his country like a year or two ago. He's been like absolutely crushing it. His like political leanings are kind of ambiguous. It doesn't matter because he is just so funny, and his sketches are like so poignant and such good like social commentary right now. And like one that's really well known is like, oh, voting for Trump turned me white or something like that. And he's basically like, it's like him in a do-rag, basically like, I don't know what happened, you know, like, but he's kind of like, there's enough cultural details in there and be like, oh, okay. He's like pretending to be like a, you know, stereotypical black guy. And but he pulls it off perfectly in a way that the woke left mob can't like tear him down. It's like, he really does a really great job of putting comedy first. And like his videos are always funny. Like the most recent one I think is about like what happened when your feminist mom goes to college or something like that. And like the other actor is this guy, Danny Polachek, who's like playing a 10-year-old boy. And she's like, what? And she's, you know, Ryan is like, what's wrong with free bleeding? And he's like, bleeding on the couch, and like, oh, sorry, put your headphones on, I'm bringing three dudes over later, like just being like gross. It's great. I'm not describing it well. It's like, but
no, I got
it. A perfect example of like, you kind of don't care what his politics are because he does such a good job of being funny and commenting on the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, you know, I find myself laughing at good comedy, whether it's of a political context at all, whether it's aimed at people on the right or on the left. If it's funny, it's funny. But, you know, a lot of folks today can't take a joke, and that is especially prevalent on the left, but it's also on the right, too, but not necessarily in a religious sense, like some would think, like, you know, because you're offending their religious sensibilities. I mean, that still is there to a certain extent, but it's not as big as it used to be. But a lot of people now are just so on edge, they're so polarized by this era that, like, on Twitter, I often make very wry comments, jokes that I think are intended. I mean, I think they're obvious sarcasm, but people disagree, and they fly off the handle about minor things, and most people who read the Cato Gottfried Twitter feed would call themselves conservative, and I get a little angry because folks just can't take a joke. It's not that they're, it's a different kind of anger than on the left, though. I have to be specific about that. It's not so much like a moral condemnation of what you're doing, which is what you get from the left. With people on the right, it's more like, you can't toy with our emotions. How dare you try to do that? It's just because they're very nervous and on edge. It's a sign of the times, and I understand that. But what more people need to do now is be able to take a step back and just laugh at things when there's something worth laughing at. And folks kind of need to chill out. I use those words a lot, chill out, because today people are just so dour that humor escapes them on far too many occasions.
Yeah, not everything is an attack. And also there is a lot that's lost, you know, in the written word, right? There's probably like your joke, like you could have said it to a room full of people, gotten a bunch of laughs, but then you like try to tweet it out and it doesn't really like resonate, which is like something that like comics struggle with all the time. You're like, oh, this, you know, sometimes things are better in tweet form. Sometimes things are better like said on stage. So there's that. And then there's also, Yeah, like people are, like the real limit of human interaction that the last 8 months have been characterized by. People are like, it really affects like the mind body connection. And like, I mean, everything that's going on right now, it's like almost like if you wanted to kill people's spirit, you know, if you wanted to kill the American way of life, like how would you do it? And it looks a lot like what's going on now. So it's hard to not be on edge with. You're losing your business one day, you're losing Absolutely. Your job the next. Some people are so worried about COVID. A lot of people are really worried about their rights slipping away. I feel like that's the thing to be more concerned with right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and then I had people that I was meeting on the, during the march, like during the rally, they were like, always people from other countries, so much more passionate about like, yeah, we really got to watch where this country is headed. It's a really slippery slope. It's starting to sound like kind of communist and socialist. And people are like, I have friends in China and they're telling me like, ew, it looks like that's where you guys are headed. And people in this country born and raised here are like, la, la, la. It's like, you don't know what you have till it's gone, which is pretty scary. So, but yeah. That is why we do need to laugh right now. Like we need comedy. So bad. And it's like, but like fucking Cuomo, like they comedy clubs, who knows when they're going to be open. They have us at the same level as strip clubs, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're like at the very bottom of the priority list. And like yeah. Zoom shows are okay, but it's not the same. It's like, you can't like feel people's energy through a Zoom.
No, you really can't. It's totally different. It's a very poor substitute for genuine interpersonal interactions. That's just, you know, there's no two ways about it. And that's especially important, obviously, for something like comedy. It's, you know, there's nothing quite like the atmosphere of a comedy club. And that, you know, just doing a Zoom is not going to fit the bill, to say the least. Not going to fit the bill, excuse me. From Mark or Javet, how many closet conservative comedians are there? I wouldn't be in a position to know that, Mark, but I think Chrissy can probably answer that a hell of a lot better than I can.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's probably a lot of comedians that are so afraid of like losing work if they don't appear to be like on the right side, which is the left side, I guess. Unless you like, I'm lucky to have found like the niche of Compound Media where like they're all for free speech and like funny really is funny. If somebody is like playing with stereotypes, like we know that they're jokes and it's not like you're actually racist, you know, because it's the fans of Compound Media are like so amazing. Like they will come to shows, they will buy your merch. Like they're really, really wonderful people. So I feel like there's probably people who are like, yeah, the left is sounding like kind of fucking crazy, but like they're so afraid of being associated with Trump that they're probably stuck in the middle, floating around, you know, feeling alone, which is probably a terrible place to be, you know? And I think a lot of people don't realize, like, and that was the biggest thing I observed this past weekend in D.C. I'm like, oh, MAGA is, like, all about love. There's, like, no hostility. It's just like, oh, it's people who, like, love this country and, like, don't want to see it turn to shit. Like, that's it. So I was like, oh, wow. Like, I feel like I was wrong about them for so long. But I also had, like, never gone to a rally, so...
Well, it's really interesting to see that kind of atmosphere at something that, you know, the media would try to paint as this awful, you know, gathering of fascists, so on and so forth. I saw, you know, a big rainbow flag at the rally. I saw a big placard for Jewish Trump supporters. I saw a lot of something else for Black Trump supporters. And of course, a lot of women for Trump signs. So, I mean, if that's what a fascist rally is, I don't think that the term fascist rally means much at all. I mean, obviously, you know, it's nothing of the sort.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, why is Trump fascist if, like, the Dominion voting machines, which are literally made for fascist reasons to, like, install, like, presidents or dictators that, like, the people didn't really vote for. Why would these machines not be in favor of Trump if Trump is truly the fascist? It's like, but I don't know, but people aren't thinking that way because they're brainwashed. And it's like, I feel for these people. So, you know.
Yeah, crazy stuff. From K-Max McDonald, for both, do you see some of the college kids Antifa types changing their views with age and experience? The real world has a way of changing young kids to a much more accurate view of the world. Perhaps, K-Max, what's going on now is that there's a lot of income insecurity, which you also call employment insecurity. Even with the economy getting better as it has, people don't have on the left as advocates. There wouldn't be a walkaway movement if all of them wound up, you know, staying on the same wavelength. But also, you know, there is so much social pressure to conform now, with wokeness being the new religion, de facto state religion, one might say, that it will inhibit people from thinking for themselves, even under the best of circumstances. But so I'm pessimistic about a lot of college kids growing into more reasonable adults. But at the same time, there is hope, because some will. It's just a question of how many will. And that's my take on that. Excellent question, by the way. And that's
There's definitely hope, because I know that growing up, like, my parents are boomers. They were like, us three kids going to college was like my mom's number one goal. Yeah. Like, and now it's like the bubble on college has been kind of birthed. Because we've been hearing for years, like, everyone's like, yeah, I have these crazy fucking loans, but I still work a minimum wage job. Like, I could have just gone to trade school. I'd be making 100K right now. And it's like, I hope that the end result is the people that really are called to go to college and get it, whatever, their bachelor's, their master's, do because they really want and are passionate about that, not because they just feel like this is what I have to do to get any job, which was the messaging that I received and, like, a lot of my friends received growing up. I think it's, yeah, like, make trade school cool again. I think that's happening. Cause people are, the bubble was popped on college and people are like, oh, we're not really getting our money's worth. Like, it's taking us fucking decades to pay these loans off, and, like, for what? So I think that's part of it. I think, the pendulum is kind of swinging back. Like, now there's people that are having kids that are like, all right, well, maybe my parents were a little, like, lefty. I'm kind of like, there is, like, a sort of social recalibration going on. And I think, like, your parents affect you so much. So, and Antifa and BLM have gotten so much bad press. Like, I mean, if you don't associate them with violence and looting at this point, like, you've kept your head in the sand. So it's like, I think it's coming out that it's less cool to be associated with those groups. You're always going to have the fringe people. You're always going to have, like, the whatever, like, nonconformists, the people that are, like, I guess, weaker and gravitate more to, like, the cultishness of these groups. And, there's always people like that in every generation. But I think with sort of people, you know, looking at college in a realistic way now, and also, you know, basically the bad PR of BLM and Antifa, I think are going to sway youngsters hopefully away from that a little bit more. And maybe the parents of these kids will kind of be like, yeah, more aware of it. Like, if they see their kid kind of, like, drifting off that way, are going to be like, what the fuck? Like, let's come back to earth a little bit. Like, I don't want to see you on a viral video, like, punching a guy's head in, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, all this, because, well, now that I think about it, there were youth straw polls before the 2020 election. And the one that I remember most, I think all of them were for Trump, but in Iowa especially, it was like a 20-point margin among kids who were in, I think, high school and middle school. They said they would vote for Trump if they were able to vote. And that shows to me that the young folks of America are not necessarily, you know, made to be leftists. They don't necessarily grow up as leftists. It's these damn colleges, specifically the ones that have liberal arts curriculums, that push people way to the left. And I think this phenomenon is especially felt among women, although it by no means is exclusive to them. So it's a unique situation. But more people get science degrees, or if they don't go to college at all, even better, if they just learn a trade, I think that will help preserve some sanity out there among younger people. At least I hope it will. But looking at what I've seen, I think it is without doubt these universities, these colleges that get people politically radicalized. But then also the financial experience of having this debt makes people economically radicalized. And let's be honest, with employment getting more competitive because there's a lot of outsourcing, a lot of technology that allows people to compete for jobs from across the world even and do them remotely, someone with a... with an arts degree in, I don't know, gender studies or ethnic relations from the 18th century, nobody's gonna, that means nothing in terms of how suited you are for employability. So I think a lot of folks are, by the whole college experience, comprehensively speaking, it's churning them toward the left. So if that can be broken, If there can be a more of an employment-centric educational model that's being followed, I think it will do very well for preventing people from becoming adults because they were made to be leftists as college kids. I was going to move on, Chrissy, but I said so much. Is there anything to say before I get to the next question?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, like, when I was right out of college, I had a communications degree because I thought I needed one to get any job. And it's like, and you know what? That kind of was true because all my first jobs were all assistant jobs. Like, you know, I worked at a hedge fund. I worked at an advertising agency. I then worked in the admissions department of Upper East Side, like all boys private school. And it's like, yeah, you kind of did need, it's almost like there might need to be a little bit of a, I don't know, a change in employers. Like, if you don't require a college degree, which I didn't need a college degree, I just needed to know like Microsoft Word, really, like, and just be conscientious. That's all you need to be, like, an assistant, and also like be like really good at like not sticking up for yourself. I think if you have low self-esteem, you can definitely be a really good assistant, which I was for many years. And so maybe a little bit it's on the employers, like, not really need a college degree. But yeah, I think my college experience, yeah, I was just a women's studies minor, but I definitely graduated feeling like I don't need a man. I don't need anybody. Like, it's cool. It's cool to not need a man. It's cool to not have a boyfriend, like, which sucks. The message should be like, yeah, you shouldn't need someone, but wouldn't it be great to have like a partner in crime that you can support each other and like have each other's backs and have somebody to cry with and shit like that. So, but I learned that over the years. But yeah, I don't think college really prepared me for much. Although, I mean, it did open my mind in some ways. Like, I did feel like the most intellectually curious that I had ever been, but it was like, oh, we're going to help you be intellectually curious, but just look this way, when really, I don't know. I'm not explaining it well.
No, you are. No, you absolutely are. I get you entirely. It's unfortunate what these colleges are doing. And one of the worst things that they offer people, the veneer of open-mindedness, when in reality, it's religious
indoctrination. It's so condescending and shitty about it. Like, I had an art history professor, Dr. Eliasoff. He would like tell his whole class of people, he basically call us dumb unless we read the New York Times every day. And it's like, okay, it's probably impossible to meet an art history professor who isn't a condescending piece of shit, but like, it's in little ways, it all contributes to who you're going to be. And these are like some very impressionable years.
Mm-hmm. Without doubt. Absolutely. The impressionability of college kids cannot be understated. Goes a long way to explaining how they wind up with this sort of mindless groupthink that they find themselves entangled in. From Jonathan Gillespie, how many celebrities and comedians are anti-Trump for financial and social desirability reasons versus those who genuinely despise Trump, the man? I would say most are legitimately anti-Trump because of the field they're in, because of their social circle, but there's groupthink there as well. But I think there's a very strong minority that do this whole thing as an act, and they know it's an act. It's not even subconscious. But they do it because they don't want to be canceled, blacklisted, yeah, whatever. They don't want to feel the heat, which they undoubtedly will. And it's you know, producers can get away with being Republicans like Jerry Bruckheimer. But, you know, actors and such, really, there's so much pressure from the public that's so vocal on social media.
Yeah.
And comedians, same thing. That's my take there, Jonathan. Anything to say about what Jonathan brought up, Chris?
Oh, for sure. Like, the typical social media, like, yes, now, thank God, there are like some alternate social media companies like Parler and Rumble that I just found out about the other day. I got to set up my profile there. But at the same time, that doesn't mean we need to, like, yes, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, like, have been doing crazy censorship, especially like during and around the election. Does that mean we need to cut off? Like, there have been times where I've been like, fuck Twitter, I'm just going to go on Parler. But it's like, I also have 22,000 fans over there. It's like, it's good to do all of it. I think you should do all of it. And like, whatever, talk in the code words you need to talk to not get censored or suspended from YouTube. But that's the thing, is like, the left owns pretty much all the big social media, and it's all linked. It's like social media, Hollywood, comedy, TV industry, right? It's all left-leaning. So it's like, you don't want to be socially ostracized and potentially lose opportunities because of a political statement, or even just not being vocally for the left can get you kicked out.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Now what's that saying? They consider it silence is complicity, or silence is violence.
Fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. But you know, I expect insanity today, but it's always, you know, nauseating to see this stuff peddled because it destroys lives. That's the bottom line.
It's like, that's some real Nazi shit right there. It's not like having a different opinion doesn't make you a Nazi.
Absolutely correct. And I'll say this is the last call. If anyone has a reasonable, responsible question for Chrissy or myself, please feel free to leave it in the live chat as a super chat, and we'll get to it before we go. Thank you very much in advance. Now from, if I could find the next one I was supposed to get to, this happens sometimes. Here we are from Wojak Woes. I'm a Zoomer, and trust me, we're sick and tired of our best years being ruined by woke mobs not taking a joke. Do you both see a backlash eventually? I see one now. But the question is, how much larger will it get over time? Depends, I think, how much people want to laugh, how much people really want to be those who think for themselves rather than, you know, part of some abstract group, which would be how they derive their identity and their sense of worth as a human being. But the backlash is here. The question is, how much does it grow? A lot of Zoomers are sick of this. And I think beyond politics, beyond, you know, culture, there is a point when you push human beings at which you can push them that they're just not going to take it anymore if they feel that they've been restricting them what they can say or think. The question is, how many people would feel that way? And I think that this, you know, natural response to the insanity that's being proliferated is what would drive a lot of Zoomers against leftism over time, not necessarily toward anything of traditional conservatism, but against leftism. And by this stage, I think anything non-leftist would be thought of as de facto conservative, which we're heading into right now. So that's my take there, Wojak. Great question. Chrissy, anything to say about it?
Well, I've noticed, like, yes, even though, like, corporate comedy and industry and Comedy Central stuff, like, that is more left, I've noticed a lot, like, The Road and comedy clubs, not that they're more right, but they are kind of more free speech and, like, they might not be out about it, but I feel like there are more club owners that are like, yeah, I want to remain in business. They actually like comedy. They probably are for free speech. I'm like becoming aware of more of these, like, you know, owners and, like, yeah, venue owners and people that are like bookers, producers, like they're kind of rising to the top because they're the ones that really want to keep their business going and want it bad enough. And I find like those crowds tend to be like, maybe they are more center right. And then like corporate buzzy bullshit, like TV stuff is left. So it's like, there's definitely, I think it will survive because like the real, it's really separated the comics. Like, you know, they're not relying on their regular spots. So it's like, okay, now it comes down to like, are you cultivating your own fan base? Like, what are you doing, you know, in terms of your online presence? There's a lot of comics who've just straight up, they don't know it yet, but they quit, you know, because it's like, they're not going to their same three Brooklyn coffee shops every week. They think they're doing comedy, but it's like, I'm not explaining this like well, but I think that like at the end of the day, like the real comedy lovers are for free speech, and they'll see who like the kind of not real comics, but they'll see the comics that like align with those values, and those would be the ones that get booked, and like people are going to look for it. I think, and I found the shows that I've done, like the secret shows over the summer. And I did a show in New Jersey last month at Tiff's Ale House in Morris Plains, which is absolutely one of those places that I mentioned, like the guy, Mike, that owns it, like loves comedy to the point where like, he'll like lose money to put on a great show, like whatever. It's not his goal, but like, he just really like, he's passionate about comedy and like bringing the community together. So it's like places like his, which I think are going to make it. And people will want to come out, and these audiences have been so like hungry for a good time and appreciative of the entertainment and really wanting to laugh. So that gives me so much faith, you know, when you do these kind of gigs, it's so easy to like just be on social media and be like, oh my God, comedy's destroyed, comedy's over, comedy's canceled. And there are a lot of comics who really believe that. They really are like doom and gloom about it. But you just got to find the people that are full of hope and are upbeat about it, you know? So yes, I think that there will be a kind of like pendulum swinging back. And I think ultimately the comics that are more center right, like do better on the road because they're more in touch with what most of the country is laughing at.
No question about that. There was even a fellow, Jonathan Hyde, who's not on the right, but now people probably call him a conservative, even though he would strongly disagree with that. He wrote about how conservatives are more attuned to seeing, not necessarily that they agree with different points of view, but that they are more attuned to understanding different facets of human nature and the human experience in terms of, it's kind of hard to put this, but how they perceive the world around them. While people on the left were more prone toward very rigid, very ultra-moralistic thinking that would obviously channel out any prospect of comedy if the comedy isn't in tune with whatever they think is morally correct on any given day. I've not explained his position very well, Hines, but it's definitely worth checking out. He wrote the book The Righteous Mind. Very, very interesting fella. From Row House, Chrissy, is there pressure as a female comic to just make fun of men? Some come off as hating men, and their whole act is about this.
Yeah, like early on in my career, for sure, I felt that pressure because other gals, like my friends, were kind of all doing that. And then you see those girls like get booked on big shows. You're like, oh, I have to be like that, I guess. That's what people laugh at. But I think the bubble on that was kind of poked a few years in after I just felt like a change within myself. I was like, wait a minute, like, I don't hate men. Like, I do like men. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to hang up my shelf? Who's going to change my tire? Like, I find that this whole thing is not really resonating with my true feelings. So, and which is like, was kind of a brave step. You know, I had to be like, I either hang on to this, which is like the cool group, but it's like, ultimately doesn't feel like genuine and like, right. And then that comes across to the audience. Like if you're just pandering, I mean, like the audience can feel whether you're being genuine or not. So I was like, okay, I'm not gonna be able to do that. I might as well just like lean into how I really feel. And if I lose friends, lose, you know, opportunities, well, I guess that's what I'm gonna do. And then you just hope that people are going to like you for you.
A very an ever relevant hope that I think people have had throughout the ages. But today, with, you know, groupthink that's going around, it's especially relevant. Something that never goes out of style, but it's even more in style than usual, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's a line like, oh, everybody's a feminist until you need a shelf hung up. And then you're like, fuck the patriarchy until I need to put in an AC.
it's amazing sort of the mental gymnastics that people do to rationalize when they fall short of their own public, the standards that they espouse for others in public. It happens all the time across the spectrum. But what's happened is that with the left getting as puritanical, as religiously minded as it has, it's having these high standards for everyone that it really can't meet for itself. Newsom and what's going on in California, him not doing social distancing and not even wearing a mask, despite mandating this for everyone else, is just one example. But, and he even used the word, I need to as a preacher, I need to practice what I preach. And he used the word preach so many times in his atonement for being hypocritical that it really goes to show that this is, you know, it's a religion. It's not just politics, it's a religion. And that is fascinating, yet not in a good way. From Row House, corny joke, Chrissy, but as a redhead, do you get the carpet match the drapes question?
I do get that question. And to that, I would say, no, the carpets do not match the drapes because I have hardwood floors.
from Wojak Woes, Chrissy, how did you connect with Ethan and the Kill Streets?
Or even kind of just like randomly. I think because maybe like, because I know Ryan Long has done the Kill Stream a bunch. I don't know how we found each other, but I just like, I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's funny. And I always am like really excited to find new like niches of potential fans, like whole little, like they're like a whole little world of people. I was like, oh, it's cool. Like, I can't explain it. It feels just like a little like oasis of potential new fans. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll try to make these people laugh. And then I liked Ian. In fact, I did a podcast episode with Ethan Ralph. It's probably going to come out in the next like week or two. So yeah, I don't really remember how we found each other. I think he reached out to me and I was like, all right, things are so random. Like I've made so many great connections, like just through like Twitter DMs pretty much.
Yeah. Twitter is something else. It has a lot of problems. It certainly is nothing that's, I think, headed in the right direction, but it can still be very, very useful. And what you're describing is a testament to its usefulness.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything else in the live chat, so I think I'll do the last question here, Chrissy. Where do you see comedy going in the future? Do you even think that it will be such things like organized comedy, or do you think that it's going to get so decentralized that you can't even talk about it in a general sense? Or might there be some sort of leftist hegemony that makes comedy very unfunny and just, I guess, regulated to whatever the narrative is today or this hour?
Yeah, I think streaming, live streaming shows and Zoom shows are like unfortunately going to be, you know, part of comedy for like probably the next year until the masses become less paranoid, like whether that involves a vaccine or not, probably it does. So it's going to be that mixed in with like probably still these underground secret kind of speakeasy type, you know, backyard shows, which is cool. Like there's always going to be people like having their own illegal shows, which I think is badass. And I think that the comics will gravitate towards whatever state has like the most lax rules, you know, like states like Florida now, whose rules aren't as strict. Basically anywhere but New York and California looks good for performing. So yeah, I mean, like I hope SNL wakes up and realizes what they're doing sucks and like they're alienating. I mean, they've already alienated such a huge part of their audience. So it's like, who knows if they can even come back at this point. The same can be said of all like Fallon and all these late night shows. It's like they've just turned people off, I think, so permanently. Like it might take new late night hosts for that even to be possible again. Although I think a lot of people have fully switched off of late night TV in terms of like getting that comedy. And I think they're also switching away from like, of course, switching away from mainstream news to like these independent journalists that we're seeing, you know, like the Tim Pools, the Mike Cernoviches, etc.
Definitely, yeah. I know the media is in transition. There's no question, and the establishment media is none too happy about that. So, I mean, if people don't want to consume it, it's not going to get, you know, much traction. I mean, there are still people who like the establishment media, but they're older people and the younger people. I mean, a lot of them don't have even a cable subscription, let alone the interest in watching cable news. So that goes to show where things are going. Probably the average age of someone who watches like the ABC evening newscast is, I know Fox News is like almost 70, maybe ABC is 50 or 60, but it's pretty crazy stuff. So yes, transition.
I thought you were going to say the average age is like 110, which is like Joe Biden's peak voting group, you know, and like, the best with those over 110 year olds.
Yeah, he does. I mean, that's it's actually something that has been a mainstay of the Democratic Party for some time, overperforming with people who died before anyone voting today. I even saw in Pennsylvania from the state website that people were born in the 1850s, the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, all voted in September. Very interesting how that came to be, but it did. And apparently there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You're not allowed to talk about it. It's just great. But, you know, it definitely is a very, very bad sign of the times.
Who knew that dead people would be like so woke? I don't know. I see it coming.
Wokeness raises the dead. It's a miracle of the church of social justice warfare. it's funny. I mean, this is good. You have to laugh at this stuff, but it's really sad at the same time that people think that, you know, it's all just a hoax, a scam, whatever. But you know, that's groupthink. Once again, it goes back to something we were obviously really delving into. The groupthink is insane. And it leads people to have these, you know, bizarre views. But anyway, what's not bizarre has been this conversation. It's been an outstanding one. Chrissy, thank you very much for your time here tonight. Really, really enjoyed this.
And I felt like because you had a stuffed animal in your background that I had to prop up my little baby Yoda.
Great.
You watch The Mandalorian at all?
Pardon me?
You watch The Mandalorian?
Do I have a, is it a lion? Did you ask?
It's a show on Disney Plus. It's called The Mandalorian. It's like you wouldn't, unless you're a Star Wars nerd. All right. I guess you don't watch it. It's fine. It's a good show. And this is a character from the show. It's baby. It's Yoda, but baby.
Yeah. I knew it was Yoda, but I didn't realize it was a baby Yoda.
Well, he's hot right now. Yeah, he's a big deal.
No, I was going to say, no, it's nice that my my pal back there finally has a virtual friend. So he's been lonely for some time. He was a gift from my mother for Hanukkah several years ago. Wow. And he even has a name, Josh. And he just, there's a story behind why he's over there. Originally, he just would hang around the room because I couldn't figure out a place to put it. But one day I was cleaning the couch and I just left him up there. And people then started asking, what's that toy back there? And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And then I put two
and two. He's my little friend. I talked to him.
So I just kept him there. And he's become sort of like a mainstay of Kato Gottfried since then. He's actually not the show's mascot. That was my co-host, Paul Gottfried's. His dog is Dachshund Minna, who died earlier this year. She was like 16 years old, but she was a great dog, but she used to bark during the episodes because she was senile. And she knew what was going on. So we decided to make her mascot. But, she was a nice dog, but, Josh is sort of I wouldn't call him the mascot, but he's definitely a presence here, but it's nice to know that he has a new virtual friend.
Oh, for sure. This would be so perfect to just put a camera in like one of his eyeballs. I should do that.
You know what? That would be something else. That would actually, somebody can make money with an idea like that.
Yeah.
It's something else. I do like when, I guess you could say shows or, pretty much would be just, I guess you could do it with a comedy act too if you wanted to. But I was thinking more like tape shows when they have something to identify themselves by in a unique way that's sort of quirky, offbeat, that kind of deal. So I didn't intend to have that, but Josh wound up being that. So it worked out nicely. And I wish more people would do sort of, fun, off the wall stuff like that. But I've seen less and less of it today. I think it goes back to this period being such a kind of like a dour one that
taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people are so serious that they seriously forget to have fun in life. And it's unfortunate. But no, this has been a really fun discussion. Chrissy, thank you very much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me, Joseph. Yeah, this was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it goes without saying, if you'd like to come back on the show, more than happy to have you. There's always, I'm sure, fun stuff to discuss.
Oh, yeah. Anytime.
Well, thank you. And I do want to thank everyone for tuning in, whether you just watched, whether you participated in the live chat, or you super chat, I raised my glass to you. Thank you all in advance. So once again, thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next time. Before we go, though, if you like this episode and want to support the show, please consider donating to it by clicking on the PayPal link in the description below. Paul and I appreciate your generosity very much.
Make it rain for Josh.